kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. How are you doing?
Pretty damn good. I upgraded my computer this weekend, and I just keep sitting here looking at it going, it's so pretty. You can't even see the new part I put in it because it's a CPU, and it's covered by, well, it is covered by the new AIO, and that's pretty. But you can't even see the CPU, and yet I still keep looking at it going, why are you so pretty?
You just got to have all those pretty lights, huh?
I purposely chose the AIO I did because I liked the way the lights looked. I have no shame.
So proud of you. Also people with no shame, Pernell, yeah. Tim, and Chris are here.
They don't exist yet.
But our shame is not present.
Well, they have to exist now because they're going to jump in otherwise before we get to my story.
Oh, well, we want to hear your story because you had an invigorating weekend.
I had a whirlwind weekend.
Yeah. You were really on the ropes there.
Yeah, I'm friggin' exhausted right now. I'm running off of like running on fumes off of like 2 hours of sleep. My wife got bit by a cat, go figure.
That happened.
The crazy cat people got bit by a cat. She had Pickle in a harness visiting some family, and one of the other people brought out a Rottweiler puppy. And
that seems wildly
irresponsible
of these people.
Yeah, the puppy was just excited to meet someone new, and Pickle was freaked the fuck out.
I can't imagine why.
The puppy wanted to make a friend, and Pickle is not friend material because he is Pickle the Dickle.
Pickle is very much friend material if you're human.
Yeah.
I have the pictures of him sleeping on Ashley's face to prove that.
That is true.
That'll be the picture for the episode.
He's also friendly with chairs.
But yeah, tried slipping the harness and Ashley grabbed him and he was not happy about it and bit and clawed and scratched. And when he bit her hand, it punctured into the tendon and it got infected in the tendon. So she had to go and have emergency surgery yesterday.
That is about as bad as that could have gone.
Yeah,
like from just like a cat bite. It just like so
it was like 20, 0 to 100.
Yeah. Critical bite roll.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive, but she's home, she's doing good. I'm tired as hell. I'm excited to go to bed tonight.
That's good.
And I'm celebrating with Pepsi Blue because it's 2002 again.
Yay, not again.
Pernell, how are you doing? You're quiet tonight.
Who, me? I'm doing
Pernell.
I'm doing pretty much. Just about the gist of it.
Your phone.
No, I'm not.
You sound like garbage pants.
That's about right. I'm here and I'm kicking. That's about the gist of that. But how about you guys? How are you guys doing? Aside from Joe, because I did follow that story, which is unfortunate, but I am glad that she's at least on the mend.
Yeah, how was your day? You were recording a little bit later tonight because you had some business to attend to. Anything fun?
Not really. Another bad date experience. Exercise. Yeah, that's life. Shitty. Went to the gym, worked out again, and had to pick my mother up from work to give her a ride home, which is why I'm late. So that's life. Anyway,
it is life, and life comes first here on SML. But now we're here, and we got shit to talk about.
How many times have you been like, you just have to answer the door for your family whenever they show up on the air and you're not even allowed to mute? You lying son of a bitch.
That was a fantastic response.
But it's funny.
I have to say.
Wait. I'm in the Nintendo eShop coming soon section, prowling around for stuff to beg for. And there's a DreamWorks Spirit game. That's like a 20-year-old like animated movie, right? Is that coming back or something?
Wait, say that again? DreamWorks
Spirit.
What?
Spirit, the cartoon movie about a horse.
The horse movie?
Netflix bought it and then made a whole series and toys and stuff out of it. Yeah. It's been a thing for a couple years now. Wow. It did really well. And like my kids watch it. And I'm just like, okay, have fun with that. Do you want to watch it? No, I fucking don't.
It's a thing about horses. Of course, it's done well.
DreamWorks Spirit, Lucky's Big Adventure. I'll be damned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was like, wait a minute. That's from the past. How much is it?
Yeah.
40.
I have to actually look at it.
I'm telling my kids
that 40 bucks.
Don't nobody tell my kids that exists. They don't know if mama don't say it out loud.
Well, you know,
Lord knows if we get it in for review, Jacob will want it because it's ponies.
You got to have the talk with your kids someday. It's like the Santa Claus talk is you have to have the licensed video game, property video game chat talk with your kids. You know, it's uncomfortable, but it has to be done. Otherwise, they're going to find out from their friends.
The amusing thing about that is that my youngest is just like...
What do you do with Santa Claus that this is an uncomfortable conversation?
I kind of, lost the metaphor.
No, you know what? I don't want to know.
But my youngest is like, video games based on movies and movies based on video games. She's firmly planted in that this is trash realm, which is funny because she's only 8. But now my soon-to-be 14-year-old, she's like, look at all my favorite things, crossing genres. And I'm like, oh my God, please stop.
Wait a minute. An 8-year-old has opinions that line up perfectly with the internet?
8-year-olds are things, dude. I mean, you don't even know.
that kind of tracks.
Yeah, she's pretty on par with it. And she's not even allowed on the internet beyond, doing her schoolwork.
What kind of crossovers is she all about? Is, Marvel DC doing something I don't know about?
No, they played Trollhunters and stuff like that. The Trollhunters game versus the TV show. And there's a couple that I've done for the podcast that the kids have played. And I took them specifically because I knew they were properties that the kids enjoyed on Netflix or whatever, and then they played the games, and number 2 just thought they were the best things ever, and number 3 was just like, why are you doing this to me? So it's an interesting conundrum to watch the two of them go back and forth over whether or not it's good or bad. It's just difference between them.
They just review them like us. We review games.
Do we?
Should we review some games?
Supposed to do something by today.
Yes.
Yeah, Chris, that's okay. You had nine games to talk about, Chris.
yeah.
Chris is going to be talking about every game tonight by himself.
All right, let's do it.
We're just here as the Greek chorus to move things along between.
No, I'm excited. We got a good lineup tonight. First game to talk about tonight is called R-Type Final 2, developed by Granzella, published by NIS America. Released April 30th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PC for $39.99. An inaugural flight edition is available at retail for $49.99 and includes a soundtrack disc and an art book. I got it, and it's nice and... I like it.
The art book is really nice. It has an interview with the guy in it. It's not just like a flimsy art book that sometimes you find in these things. Like, oh yeah, soundtrack art book, and it's just like,
it's not just fluff. What the hell was that? There's actual substance to it.
13 Sentinels came with an art book, and it was just like, oh yeah, this is like art that's in the game, but it didn't really show any process or anything. It was just like, yeah, I've seen these characters, but this they're actually it's a pretty. Yeah, there is words in this book. Art book is a little deceptive.
Yeah, well, experience the return of the legendary side-scroller series now on modern platforms. R-Type Final 2 unites the explosive action of the original games with the modernized visuals and gameplay features, making this a must-have title for new and old-school shoot-em-up fans alike. Tim, tell us about your time with R-Type Final 2.
R-Type Final 2. Final again. You thought it was final, but it wasn't. But you probably believed it
Why
was.
Why do they call it Final R-Type if there's two of them?
I mean, he really... It's not like Final Fantasy where they just started cranking those out. Like, they put R-Type Final out in, like, 03, something like that.
And don't call it a comeback.
I would hardly call it cranking.
They've not been... Well, back in the pre-10, they were cranking the Final Fantasies, let's say. They did Final Fantasy, and then there was many more to follow very swiftly thereafter, is the meaning. Now that crank takes a lot more effort to turn. So it keeps
rolling back to 7.
Yeah, it's just someone lets go of it, and then it just goes back to where it was before.
And they can't get it to move past 7 back to 6.
It's fine. We could all.
I love this metaphor. Let's hang around this for a little longer. Just kidding.
Sure. Let's just dwell. We got all night. No,
I'll mute myself so you can do your view.
Oh, gee, thanks.
Tim, tell us about R-Type Final 2.
Yeah, R-Type Final. One of the reasons I bought a PS2, no joke. I think it was the first sealed retail game I purchased after I finally got a PS2. R-Type Final 2. So if you're a youngin and you are, I guess, under the age of 17, you might not be familiar with R-Type, perhaps.
Is
sobering? Yes. They've had remakes. You know, R-Type Dimensions has been out on pretty much everything, I think. So that does exist. I think Delta is out on, if you got a PS3, I think you can get it on there. If you have a PSP, find yourself a used copy of R-Type Command, the one R-Type game I don't own. So R-Type game. R-Type game final two. R-Type is a really classic arcade shooter. It just didn't really hit me until I started playing it. Cause I've played plenty of more recent shooters and I've been like, good rootin' tootin' shooting, stuff, but it didn't really strike me how much like just about every shooter with a few exceptions that I've played just about like the last decade has drawn more from like Japanese bullet hell style shooters than like your Gradius R-Type, like really old, like late 80s, early 90s style of shooters, where it was less about like big curtains of bullets and more about at least in the case of R-Type, like carefully maneuvering your way through these intricately designed stages and piloting your ship around. And it's very different. Like once I sat down and I was playing this and I was like, oh, this is like a shock to the system. A little bit. It just took me back, but kind of like the conceit of R-Type, the identifying factor is that you pick up power-ups and you get this force unit that you can attach to the front or back of your ship. And attach to the front, it shoots to the front. Attach to the back, it shoots to the back. It's also indestructible and does damage. Like if you ram your ass up on enemies, it will do damage to them and or destroy them depending on the strength of the enemy. If it's the kind of enemy that goes down in one hit, it'll just dissolve when it touches that thing. And it will absorb some, like, the most basic bullets. So it's your combination defense-offense item. When you detach it from your ship, it will... You push a button, it shoots out in front of you. And depending on its level of upgrade, it has 3 levels of upgrade, it will fire out bullets on its own in its own distinct pattern. And then once it reattaches to your ship, then it will... Then your special power-up weapon will activate, and it'll be much more fancy. You also pick up missiles. You also pick up these little bits, which are like little defensive things that you can pick up, too. I know from past R-Type games, though I sure never got to that point in this one. I always died before I actually got two of them, but I'm fairly certain you can get two of those suckers, one above, one below. And that's our type. Oh, and you have a charge shot, too, which is also very cool. So that's like your basic R type. You know, these are your abilities. You guide your way through these levels. You shoot the bad guys down. And that's what you do. Something that I think I am pretty sure is new to this game. I could be wrong. I did not pop in final to double check like what was going on in that one or any other ones. Is that you can control the speed of your ship right off the bat. Like you could, you just on the left bumper, left trigger, you can either speed up or slow down. You can control the speed of your ship dynamically, which in the past, or at least in the earliest ones, you know, you'd pick up a power up and then that was your speed. Whereas this, you can slow down or speed up as needed. And that's R-Type, and R-Type's cool. What makes what R-Type Final did and what R-Type Final 2 does is you have your number of stages, but really kind of what makes this game stand out is that there are 100 ships in the game.
Jesus.
It's 99. I'm slightly exaggerating. But
how dare you?
How dare you? And each ship, well, each of it isn't completely different from one another. Like the ship, some of them are very similar. Some of them have very minor advancements one over another. They'll have different weapon loadouts, different. One of the neat things, oh, I should say, I'm pretty sure this is new. When you're selecting your ship in your hangar, you can select what bits you want to have. There's different styles of bits that do different things. There are different missile patterns, and you can only pick one.
Drop it, bitch!
So different ships have different options as far as what you can do with those. And they have different force unit power-ups. They have different special weapons. The force units do different things when they might be detached from your ship. They'll have different bullet patterns. So there is lots of stuff to do and lots of ships to unlock. The process of unlocking it, they have like a big, huge, you know, grid that splays out and different the ability to purchase different ships will unlock as you progress through the main story and meet different goals. And the game will tell you for some of them what you need to do. It's like, OK, you need to beat this level. OK, you need to beat this level. And then as you unlock, you know, one ship, you'll unlock like that. Two more might branch off of that. You need
to like the trophies in Smash Brothers where you like unlock one trophy and then the ones next to it give you hints on how to get them.
Yeah, kind of actually. Yes. Yeah, a little bit. So yeah, you will have to, there is currency you need to spend in order to unlock them. There's four different types of currency. One is just like money, which you can use to buy stuff in an in-game shop, which is like decals for your ship that you can stick on them. You can pimp your ship, by the way. I think that's also new. You can pick like the body color, the canopy color. You can stick decals on it. You can make it rad if you so choose. you can buy different pilot outfits, even though like you never see your pilot. There's like a couple spots in the game where you do, but that's a thing you can do. Or you can spend your money currency to buy more of your building currency, though there seems to be limitations on that. For the most part, though, it's like, I don't know. It seems like it'll probably be quite a grind to unlock 99 ships, though.
Question.
What up?
Can you get Guy Fieri flames on your R-Type?
It may be unlockable. I don't remember. You can definitely get like the shark jaws you see on like a fighter jet type deal. Nice. I'm pretty sure there's flames in there.
Gotta be flames.
Gotta be
flames. I'm gonna make a Guy Fieri whenever I get my copy.
Yeah, the Flavor Town.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they have funny names,
flavor
too.
Type, like
the,
final.
The one I was flying around last night is called Delicatessen. So, like, who knows? Mm. Flavor Town might be in there, and I just haven't unlocked it yet.
Nice.
It seems like it's going to be quite a grind to just get up those materials to unlock everything. Though it seems like, you know, if you sit down and you play through and get reasonably far, you're going to get enough materials to unlock a ship or two anyways. So the game had, I'm not exactly sure how many levels it has. I was working on the final level last night. It was called the final level, but I think the game might be lying. Not sure. the difficulties in this game are fucking hard. Like you have normal, and then there's, you know, a couple harder ones than that. But then the easier one is labeled kids, and whoever like made this difficulty and called it kids must hate kids, because it is still really fucking hard. There is definitely a difference between that and normal. Once I went back to playing on normal, I was like, oh, there are way more bullets on normal than there were on kids mode. But kids mode is still really hard. Some of these levels are really tricky with the navigation you have to do. And sometimes when you die, it, you know, the checkpoint is in a really nasty spot to be brought back in with like no power-ups on your side. But as you die and play the game gives you more and more and more continues until you have 99 of them eventually when you start a run. So you can just like, you will probably be able to just force your way through and learn the stuff and get, you know, kind of better and better at it as you go. So you don't die quite so much on your journey through the game. And then, you know, things will go through more smoothly and you get more currency, you get more ships, you have more fun. Yeah. There is a stage select, so you can pick the stage you want to go into and score attack, which I think is individualized stage scoring stuff. So the thing, the game, when I played the demo, I downloaded the demo last week before we got the code in, I was playing it on Switch, and I was like, this, and it's the first stage. And I was like, man, this looks kind of rough. I'm like, maybe it's just because I'm playing it like on the Switch, you know, in handheld mode. But then, you know, I'm playing it on my Xbox One, and the first stage, it looks a little rough. And I've seen people complaining about like the frame rate online, and it just definitely, it's weird. And this is, I'll get to what I think is going on. So yeah, the first level, I don't think makes the best impression graphically. Like it definitely left me being like the frame rate seemed off and like things just like looked a little, I don't know, low poly. It just didn't like look very good. And then, you know, the second stage is much more elaborate, more going on. Then I get to like the third stage and I'm looking at this stage. I'm like, man, this stage is like so nice and clean and the frame rate is really nice. I'm like, I don't understand. Like, what's going on in those early stages that it just doesn't look very good? And by the time I get to like the sixth stage, which just like is really eye popping visually. And I'm just like, okay, this is ridiculous. Like, what is going on in that first stage? And what I think I realized is I think the first stage is intentionally meant to be a bit of a throwback to like PS1, like R-Type Delta. Like, I think it's supposed to look a little janky because the later stages look gorgeous and have some amazing like visual and lighting effects going on in them. And that's the only reason I could think of that the first stage is kind of a little jank looking. I think it might be just like a deliberate throwback. I mean, it is a deliberate throwback because it is like literally a stage from an earlier R-Type game, just kind of many years later. But I think the game will make a bad first impression on people. And because that level is in the demo, I think that demo will leave a bad impression on people. When like, you know, once I kind of got past that and had that kind of like revelation, I was like, damn, they like, I don't know. It's just like a really interesting thing to do. But like the later levels are like really gorgeous in like their level of detail and the effects and everything going on. The soundtrack is really nice. Very R-Type-y. Yeah, and that's R-Type Final.
Sounds like a winner. So $40 on it. What are you thinking?
Yeah, it's a buy it for one. It's hard to say that it's not, honestly, because it's a really good iteration on that genre. And I mean, it's the first R-Type game in 17 years. So it's just like, this may actually be your final chance to purchase an R-Type game. So I imagine any old fans of R-Type have already bought the damn game anyway. Like, they saw it was coming and they're like, oh yes, mine. But it's a really cool game, and I hope people won't be like too turned off by that demo, and they'll stick with it to see more of what the game has to offer beyond that. And obviously there's tons of replay value with 99 ships involved and lots of stuff to try out. So
it sounds like the demo situation is the opposite of Balan Wonderworld, where like this time the game's actually good.
Like, I didn't think the demo was bad. I just thought it, I just was playing it. I'm like, man, I wish this looked better. Like, why doesn't this look better? No, but you know, it's getting on to that point where it's like Switch, especially in handheld mode, can, you know, things can be getting a little long in the tooth. And even playing on the Xbox One X initially, I was like, well, you know, I guess it is technically a last gen console now, but I'm just like, then, but then I got further in the game and I was like, okay. And then I started piecing this theory together in my head that like, it's kind of an intentional PS1 throwback, but maybe they should have made that like stage two instead or stage three. Like, put your prettiest face up front.
Worth the extra $10 to go physical and get the art book and soundtrack? So.
Yeah, I think that art book is really nice. I always love me a soundtrack. So yeah, I did not hesitate to purchase that. I forgot I pre-ordered. I pre-ordered like a year ago, and then I was like, oh, this is shipping. And I'm like, oh shit. And then you're like, here's the code. And I'm like, oh shit, I don't have to wait.
It's fantastic. Works out. So, all right. Yeah. Next game to talk about is called The Skylia Prophecy, developed by Seven Raven Studios, published by Total Console, released April 23rd on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $6.99. Explore a dangerous fantasy world in this epic quest for redemption inspired by the kill-the-player approach of the Souls games. And if you feel this type of game is too hard for you, you can make the game easier by completing side quests and spending the money earned on items and shops. Tim, tell us about The Skylia Prophecy.
Yeah, okay. Souls, like, no, that did not spring to mind in playing this game. It makes a lot more sense that this game is like $7 now. I saw that it was like $14.99 on Steam, and I was like, what are they doing with this game? So this is like a kind of trying to be a retro, pixel art looking Metroidvania type game. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Metroidvania genre. Just look at, you know, any indie game. There's so many to choose from out there, but that's kind of what it has going on. Just like, man, this game. So you get started. So your character, like you get in there and there's like kind of like a little tutorial room. Like there's nothing that shows you like what the buttons do and like the options or whatever. Like the initial story setup like scrolls by with like red text against a background that you cannot read it against, and it scrolls way too fast to be able to read it. So I don't know what the fuck's going on there. But yeah, it's like, okay, you can stab and you can duck. You cannot duck and stab, but you can duck and you can stab while standing up. You can also block. Your block is this like kind of cool looking lightning shield that pops. That would be a good idea, except that they want your block. Once you figure out what button it is also, it's like a lightning magical shield that also you use to blow up these exploding barrels, in the game. But the thing is, the range of your shield is very, very close to your character. And if you are too close to one of these barrels when you block, you will blow up along with the barrel. And
always fun.
It's not, though. guess what? It's not, though. So, like, at first it was like, you know, you're just in this one room and I'm just like, okay, well, I can, you know, get this figured out. But then it was like, as soon as I was out in the game world and there was like something else going on other than me learning exactly what I had to do, and I went to blow up a barrel, naturally I blew myself up with it. And unlocked an achievement, which gave me a good laugh. We'll put a pin in that. And because I hadn't saved yet, I had not reached a save point, it just kicked me back to the title screen. I had to start a new game. It wasn't that far in, but I was just like, wow, how about that? I got back in there, start going around. There's like a little town, reminds me of like a Zelda 2-ish town, 2D town. There's people standing around, or I guess Shovel Knight, which is a more modern example of that. And like, you know, there's a little shop. I go in the shop and I'm like, wow, nothing has like obvious prices on it. This is so weird. What's wrong with this game? And then I realized it was like very small in the actual body of the text describing what the item did. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess that's a decision. Sure. And there's like, so there's that shop. There's a hospital, which outside of it, there is a woman who will give you a pass of the game style of humor, where she insists that they do not give happy endings in that hospital. And I'm like, okay, hilarious. And then, you know, there's like a bar that will give you you can pick up quests to go and complete. Then you have to go back to the bar to complete them. And then that kind of seems to be what like will guide you through this game. And so you get like you can buy magic potions, health potions, magic potions. I encourage you to use each of them once because you'll unlock an achievement for each. Huh. Funny that.
So it's an achievement happy game.
This is a fucking this. So, yeah, God damn it. This game is $7 and you will get all the achievements in like 40 minutes. And I'm pretty sure that's why it exists, because playing it is not fun at the end of the day. Like your character does not like move with style and grace. Like you can only just stab right in front of you. You will start to pick up magic spells that will use that aforementioned magic meter that your magic, your achievement granting magic potion will refill. And you, yeah, you kind of like an explore a 2D world going through doors into dungeons. Things appear to be broken up in stages. I don't know how. I only know because you get an achievement when you finish stage one. And another achievement for killing all the enemies in stage one.
Are you sad you missed out on this one? Paul's dead.
Yes. And also I was like,
fucking yeah!
$7, 40 minutes. I'm sold.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. Yeah. It's like you get an achievement for saving 10 times.
for saving 10 times.
Saving 10 times. You just go up to the first save point and you could just run into it to save 10 times. Boom. There you go. 100 chivos.
Almost at 10 is Carnage's sub streak. He's at 9 months. So thanks for the sub, Carnage.
Thank you.
Up to 9. Hey, one more and he's at 10, just like the number of saves required for an achievement.
Yeah. So yeah, but wow. Yeah, you explore, you know, you'll find like power-ups for, you know, that'll extend like your health and your magic and or magic meters and other magic spells. So there's like things out there to get, but it feels like they're doing like the bare minimum to like shove this game across the finish line. Like there are sprites that are blatantly ripped off from Castlevania 4 in here. Just like, what are you doing, guys? And just like the level of the writing and like the feel of the gameplay and the way they're just kind of shoving you out there. And then the way you get bombarded with achievements, like so fast and furious. I'm just like I was immediately just disgusted. I'm just like, oh, that's what's going on here. It's one of these games. It's like, ugh. But I also, you know, beyond all that, like if I wasn't like ringing up achievements, that definitely put a bad taste in the mouth. I don't like that. But beyond that, I was not having a spectacular time jumping around and stabbing things and traversing the world as it was.
Well, I gotta ask, $6.99 on this one. What do you think of it?
Well, you shouldn't. You should not buy it. There are so many. This is a very saturated space in the market. Besides that, is the Metroidvanias. There's so many great ones out there. That, you know, even spending like single digit dollars on one is just like, man, you could probably find another one on sale this week for $7 or one in your Steam library or your Epic library that's just sitting there that you haven't played yet. But yeah, it feels to me like they're like trying to, you know, this game will be on sale on the Switch for like under $1 a lot. And it feels like that, you know, people are going to pick it up on Xbox and yeah, just bomb 30, 40 minutes, get them 1,000 achievement points, and then
like Carnage in chat saying I wanted to play more than the first level in that game, but hey, 1K and moving on to other games.
Exactly. Yeah. I did not want to play more than one level of that game. But that's me. But yeah, there you go. Get your chivos, kids. But otherwise, stay away.
All right. Sounds good. That is it for you, Tim. We will let you get going. Thank you for staying up late with us tonight.
Yeah. R-Type. Woo. All right. Yeah.
Well, any final words?
I had some bad jokes and I forgot them. So I'm sorry.
I don't think there's a worse joke than Flavor Type.
Flavor Type.
Yeah.
I had some joke about Flavor Type. I had some kind of an art. I had a couple of R-Type jokes, but I can't remember them now.
None of them cut the mustard of Flavor Town.
Something games might not be your type, but they are our type, something like that. something, something, not going to force the issue, something, something. Yeah. There you go. Good night.
Good session.
Fun, guys.
This is a shit show. All right. Next game to talk about is Atelier Sophie, The Alchemist of the Mysterious Book, developed by Gust, published by Koei Tecmo America, released April 22nd on the Switch, PS4, and PC for $39.99, also available in the Mysterious Trilogy Deluxe Pack for $89.99. and includes two other titles. As a fledgling alchemist, Sophie works with Plachta? Pernell, is it Plachta? Plachta?
It is actually Plachta. You nailed it.
Plachta, cool. On various alchemic recipes in order to hone her skills as they learn new recipes, explore the fields, collect materials, and synthesize new items, the power of alchemy and Plachta's memories begin to come to life. Pernell, tell us about your time with the Alchemist of the Mysterious Book DX.
So when it comes to Atelier games, I've been a fan of them for a long time. However, I never really managed to keep up with them because they come out quite frequently. So it's kind of nice that we were hit with this trilogy pack that allowed me to dip my toe into these three titles. So this is the first of the three that I got a chance to dabble in. So how does this play out exactly? Well, one thing that immediately surprised me about this game is that, for those not familiar, one defining trait about Atelier games, which I'll go into in general in a second, is that they usually run on a calendar where the game kind of prompts you to accomplish certain goals within a certain amount of time or else, essentially. So almost as if you're not really meant to do everything. They're like how like modern day Persona games are, similar concept. Whereas with this game, though, while there is a week cycle along with a day and night cycle, you're not really stuck on a calendar structure. So you are allowed to do things at your own leisure, which has its own pluses and minuses, which, again, I guess I'll talk about towards the end of the review. But the actual game itself. So this game is pretty interesting in that there isn't really a like a big bad or a sort of like urgency issue to take place. The main goal of the game is Sophie wants to help people, and she wants to do so by becoming a good alchemist, but she kind of sucks at it right now. However, for whatever reason, she, while working in her shop one day, a book that wasn't there before suddenly is, and this book can talk and fly. His name is Plachta, like Joe said. Plachta is a book that has amnesia. Oh, JRPG. And she doesn't remember what she is as a book. What, like, basically, she knows nothing about herself except she is an alchemy book that can teach Sophie alchemy. So the idea here is that there's a copacetic relationship here. Sophie is trying to help Plachta get her memories back, which somehow revolves around Sophie writing new alchemy recipes into her, which slowly jogs her memory. And Plachta, in turn, helps Sophie get better at infusing alchemy. So works together finally. So the actual gameplay loop, though, is that throughout the days and nights, Sophie is able to explore the town. While she's doing so, she runs across people, like actual residents of the town, that she can have conversations with, various events that can take place in the town. And it's kind of cool how that these events, it's almost like a sort of slice of life feel where you'll go to a location and it might just be an interaction that takes place. I don't know what triggers it. It just does. Like, it's just like, hey, someone's opening a shop here now. You can shop here. Or this person just bought this building. Or you learn why the shopkeep closes their shop at night. But it's something kind of nice about that because it gives you that sort of like interaction with the individual player characters and just kind of get a feel for what they do regularly. In addition to that, you can also go about the process of just trying to do alchemy. That's actually the biggest aspect of this game. And alchemy is I'll tell you about the actual alchemy system in a second, but as far as like gaining access to new recipes for that alchemy, usually just running around town, talking to people, sometimes buying stuff at the shop, just everything you can do in this game has a potential chance of learning, giving you access to a new alchemy recipe. Now, I'm not saying that this is all random or anything. This is all completely structured. It's just the fact that there's a lot of ways to be inspired to learn new recipes. Now, and then the last thing that you can do generally is take requests at the bar in town to help people with problems, usually like, you know, either killing monsters, delivering items, helping people or whatever. So let's say, for example, you want to learn a recipe. First thing you do generally is there's like a booklet that you have, like a lesson booklet, and it sometimes will give you like examples, like you can learn this recipe if you do X, like, for example, go out to the field and inspect, I don't know, like a patch of grass, like a specific, like wheat field or something, in which case you can go to the world map, and if the area has been unlocked, you can travel there and explore a little bit, find new alchemy ingredients, which is also a large part of the game, because you got to scavenge to get the goods, baby. Scavenge for goods, fight monsters, and also occasionally come across these inspirations for alchemy recipes. Then you can take the ingredients you've got, along with what you do know about the recipe, back to the alchemy pot to try to brew some good stuff. The alchemy process is actually both simple and complicated at the same time, because all the ingredients you get have various properties and characteristics, such as like the type of ingredient, the quality of that type of ingredient, special traits and properties and characteristics, such as like, you know, like healing potential increase or price increase. So like you can sell the item you produce at a higher price, stuff like that. And then once you've chosen the ingredients, again, based on the recipe. So if I want to make a milk, this is not a real recipe for milk, so don't bite me on this. I want to make milk. I need 2 blobs of wheat. I need a plant and I need a piece of paper. Okay. To make milk. And so
makes sense.
You could have, it makes total sense, right? You soak the paper. So you have to go through each of those types of ingredients, and it gives you a list of all the stuff you acquired for that type, and you can choose what you want to put into it. And then once you've selected everything, you go to what's actually kind of an interesting little mechanic that's new to this game, I believe. It's a board that is a grid that varies in size depending on what alchemy pot or alchemical pot you're using. Cauldron, we call them in the old country.
In the biz,
baby. You can this pot is like a bunch of squares, and all the ingredients are represented by a specific color and a shape. Think like tetramino or tetrominoes. And your goal, I can't explain this fully because I'm going to suck at it, but basically you're trying to slot these into the board in the right manner to trigger the best overall effect for your final product. And when you do it, you say yes, the game tells you how many in-game hours it'll take to produce it, and boom, you got some goods. I have not noticed a fail. It always seems to succeed, but sometimes you can get a better yield depending on the ingredients you've put in. You'll be doing that a lot, so get ready for that. But it's not bad. It's actually enjoyable to me anyway. The combat itself is pretty light and straightforward, too. Nothing overly complicated. Throughout the game, Sophie makes friends with people in town, in addition to like just the general friends she starts the game with. And she can ask them to go out of town with her when she goes on the scavenging runs to pick up the goods. Or if she's on like a monster hunt, sometimes that occurs too. Same difference. They go out with her and they fight. And then once you're in actual battle, which occurs by bumping into a monster on the field or whacking them with your staff to get a preemptive strike, you know, typical JRPG stuff, the battle begins. Enemies on, you can have up to 4 people in your party total, including her. And then the enemies are on the other side. Front lines and rear lines. I don't know if there's actually like a defense and off or offense bump based on that placement. I just know it exists. I never paid much attention to that, but what I did pay attention to was the different stances you can get into. So on every turn, you can choose whether you want the character to be in an offensive stance or defensive stance. As you can probably guess from general gaming, offensive stance allows you to do more damage, but take more damage. Defensive, take less damage and deal less damage. But in addition to that, there's one last component, something called a chain support link attack. So every time you do an attack, you will generate like a chain link bonus, generally more so generated by doing your base attack and not your special skills. Once you've pulled off 100%, the next attacker will do an attack followed by a support attack. And that support attack is based on whether you're an offense stance or defense stance. So sometimes that will factor into what you want to do. It's important to think about these things. But for the most part, you'll be spending a lot of your time just going through the motions, experiencing the world that the game has to offer, which I honestly like. The characterization is nice. The voice acting is surprisingly good, though not really the fault of the game proper, but the only downside I had was that I chose English because I'm a dude like that who's just goofy, who just I don't know. They put money into the voices. I want to try it out, you know? And the voices are good, but I recognize a lot of them from other games, which messes with you a little bit. She's like, wait a minute, I know that character. She was such and such in this game. This doesn't, now I can't hear anything but that person. But it doesn't kill the game, but again, it just kind of messes with your immersion. But it doesn't hurt it. The voice acting is actually legitimately good and heartfelt, I think. So, and there's even some characters from previous Atelier games. If you're into that sort of thing, hopefully you are. If you're not, hopefully it's because you're in my situation where just time just didn't allow, because the games themselves are generally good. So personally, I feel as though my time with this game has been very much appreciated and enjoyed. And as this is the first of the trio, I'm honestly expecting the follow-ups to be actually better. They better be, because if they're not, I'm going to say it. Or else. But at least for now, I feel as though, well, you should probably do the thing you do with the stuff.
Yeah, $40 on Atelier or Atelier Sophie, The Alchemist of the Mysterious Book DX. $40 on it by itself. What do you think?
I honestly think this is a solid buy, even by itself. Of course, depending on the follow-up reviews, it might be one of those smarter to buy with the group. I would say if the next game is that way, it's going to get the group buy. But right now, this is good by itself for $40, I think, too.
Cool. I was just about to ask, for $90, do you think it's worth just holding out and getting the trilogy instead?
Right now, I don't want to say, because I haven't tried the other two. But as long as at least one of those other ones is good, that'll end up being the statement. But at least one of the other two has to be decent as well as this one to get that call.
Cool. Well, we will find out more in the future as we cover more of the games in the series. But the next game to talk about tonight is called Legend of Keepers, Career of a Dungeon Manager, developed and published by Goblin Studio, released April 29th on Switch and out of Steam Early Access on PC for $19.99. Legend of Keepers is the perfect mix between dungeon management and roguelite. You've been hired as a dungeon manager by the Dungeons Company. Your job is simple: protect their dungeons. Chris, Cole, the two of you covered this one. Who wants to start?
Chris unmuted first, so he gets to start.
I unmuted.
I was watching.
You can hear my chair creaking first.
Yeah.
All right, well, Chris, tell us a little bit about Legend of Keepers, Career of a Dungeon Manager.
Gladly. Okay, so this is a game where basically, yes, you go through I haven't played a lot of management games, so I'm not exactly sure why that's factored in, but this is one of those. It basically is where, yes, you are hired as the manager, aka the final boss in a dungeon, right? So you are tasked with setting up traps and other smaller monsters to stop a set of heroes from getting to the treasure, with you being the last line of defense. The rest of it is basically, like I said, the management part. So it's kind of divided into two gameplay types. So for one thing, when you start your character, a set number of weeks go by. I know for the first kind of mission, it's like 38 weeks, right? So every time a week goes by...
I'll just warn everyone now real quick. We're getting bad storms in the area. So if the show has a hiccup, or if anything disconnects or anything, Mother Nature's an asshole. So.
And that goes double for you folks listening on YouTube. okay. So it scrolls through like different kind of a random draw out of a hat, things that can happen, for you to pick between. And so it might be an encounter with the heroes, who are the enemy, of course. It could be a miscellaneous event that could either be good or bad, but you have to, like, if you choose that, you have to go with it. There could be a merchant that comes up where you can buy new monsters and new traps. There could be a training thing that comes up where you can improve your existing monster, or an engineer thing that comes up that you can improve your traps. And of course, there's three different kinds of resources in the game, and you build them through the combat scenario and through events and stuff like that. And each of those are, like, you know, factor into how strong you can make your team. So and you know, this is all going to be just for this set of like 38 weeks or whatever for this campaign, let's call it. And because like as soon as you start a new campaign, although your final boss character, which is it, like you start with one centaur guy and then you can unlock two other characters through gameplay. His, you know, your main boss's overall level can go up, and then you can impart skill points onto a skill tree that will actually affect your monster's rate of improvement as well as your own. So like there is a, that's the roguelite factor, is that, you know, you can slowly permanently improve your situation. But anyway, that's basically the gist of it. And then the other side of that is the combat, where your three heroes enter the dungeon. And before they do, you get a chance to set everything up. So you have two teams of three monsters from your however many monsters you have. You can set six up, and you set them in a front, middle, and rear configuration, and they will have different attacks, and the heroes will have different attacks that might affect just the monster in the front or just the hero in the rear or the whole group. And so, you know, you can look at stats and things like that to tell like what, you know, your, what the heroes can do so that you can plan accordingly. And then in another room, you'll set up like maybe a trap, which is just one thing. And it could be like a spinning blade that does damage to everybody, or, you know, a skull catapult that will lower their morale, which we'll talk about morale in a second. And then, you know, you set up your other characters, your other monsters, your other trap, and then you are at the end, and then that's when you start. And then the heroes run through, and you basically do a series of, well, two turn-based battles where you choose from your monsters different attacks, like, you know, and they're fairly simplistic, but the point is not to win against the humans necessarily. I mean, as soon as all the humans are gone, then you won. But the idea is to kind of maybe slow them down so that your final boss can take them out. And so, you know, because your monsters will get killed, but they'll get raised up again immediately and will be useful for the next battle up to a certain point. They have morale points that lower as they get killed more. So that gives you an incentive to either through the other part of the game, the management part, there's different scenarios you can do to maybe raise their morale, or you can just swap them out for other monsters if you have them, and different things like that. So like there's all kinds of like crazy stuff you can do there. But yeah, it's that's the whole kind of gist of it. And man, I really like setting this thing up. But Cole, do you want to talk about it for a while now?
I was going
to
say, Cole, I'm imagining you had a lot more fun with the managing side of things.
Yeah, I enjoy the managing elements of it. I was kind of surprised how much it felt like playing like Slay the Spire or Pirates Outlaws and just trying to manage the resources, get the artifacts to build yourself up. It really kind of had those deck building elements without a deck. Instead of a deck, you have your monsters that you're deploying. So it kind of tickled me because I wasn't expecting it to be that kind of gameplay. And when I looked at the Steam page initially, I was like, and then the more I started to play it, the more I was like, holy shit, I'm completely wrapped into this game, and this is now my spare time, and this is what I'll be doing while I'm waiting for Cozy Grove to refresh my resources. It's just that having to strategize about which monsters you're going to have available to you at any given time and how their elemental attacks are going to work together and how you're going to deploy those during the preparation phase. That's the kind of gameplay that I enjoy the most. And I got completely just enthralled in it to the point that I was like, I don't even care if they're getting to the boss or not. It kind of became a challenge to me to see if I could kill the heroes, how soon I could kill them. Like if I killed them on the first wave of enemies, I was of monsters, I was like, man, I'm the fucking greatest. I was intrigued to see that there are difficulty options, and you can balance out like the motivation scale where the monsters lose motivation because they're employees, right? You can actually shut that down and they not lose motivation at all.
Oh yeah, I remember that now. That
there's sliding, you know, factors that you can include, and I was really impressed to see that there were that many options in a game like this, because these kind of management sims usually don't lend themselves to a whole lot of variations. But there's full on mod support, and there's even Twitch integration. I didn't try it out. I didn't see it early enough. I was just completely oblivious to the fact that there were settings until I hit them on accident.
Proud of you.
Yeah. And then I was like, well, because when I realized that it was basically just Slay the Spire, but without cards, I was like, I don't need settings. I know what I'm doing now.
So, to that point of like getting really into strategies and like, you know, trying to kill the heroes as soon as possible. The other thing I wanted to mention is that this game is interesting in the sense that not, you don't just have to kill the heroes. They also have a completely separate morale bar, which, you have certain enemies and spells and even your own moves that can lower that, morale to the point where if they run out of that, they will run away, and that's the same as killing them, and you actually get a different resource. Yeah. The resources are blood, tears, and money. So you get blood for killing them, tears for making them run away and you know, crap their pants and stuff, and, you know, money all around, you know, for just different things. But so it's kind of cool, like, because your more terrifying monsters might actually not do so much damage, but they can do great, like, morale damage. And you can even kind of balance it out so that you can maybe kill two heroes and then with the remaining one, just terrify them until they run away, which was actually my strategy. I would let the last hero always get to my final boss, and then I would use the terrifying move to get them to run away, and that way I kind of got a balance of like all the different kind of
warn the rest, you know, of them.
There are also three different bosses. I've unlocked the first two. I have not unlocked the third one yet, but there are different campaigns for each boss.
Yeah, you have to level up the second the first unlockable to like level 5 or 6 or something, which is actually kind of slow. Like that, you have to play like.
Your progression is slow. I did find that the second one, once I unlocked her, her progression was a lot quicker. But I think it was also just because I knew what I was doing more.
Yeah, totally.
So. Well, this one sounds pretty good. So $20 on it. What do the two you think?
This is an easy buy it from me.
Yeah, me too. I really enjoy, and I didn't even get into the aesthetics. The music and graphics are also really great. Mm-hmm. Excellent sprite art.
There's even voice acting and stuff.
Yeah, from the lady in HR who tells you. Like, the game's actually kind of light on humor, even though, like, it's, you know, it should be, like, really funny. It's like, there's kind of just jokes at the beginning and end kind of deal. And everything else is, like, it's an absurd premise, but they deliver it with sincerity. That
I like, though, that they really play into it. Like, this is a business. Get your shit together, you know. And
I also,
you can get promotions and shit, and it's funny.
I also like, so the humans are rated from adventurers at level 1 to like champions at level 5, and you can sometimes choose between them. And I really like that if you choose the level 1 adventurers, like, most of them are kind of pudgy and like there's bards and stuff, and I don't know. I enjoy the whole thing. But yeah, this is a great game. I think that people should give this one a shot, even if you're kind of wary of like super difficult strategy games. Like, this one can be tuned down to where it's very accessible.
Nice.
I'm glad to hear that, because I blind bought it, so there you go.
All right.
Nice. Well, it's good that you chimed in, Pernell, because you got the next game. Next game to talk about is Dungeon and Gravestone, developed and published by Wonderland Kazakiri, released April 23rd on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $24.99. Flimsy first look, full of hidden depth in reality, dungeon RPG where you die many times. Ernell, sounds pretty simple and straightforward. Tell us about it.
Dungeon RPG where you die many times. There you go. Give me that number. So what this game is exactly is it honestly is nice in the sense that, like, if you're familiar with the games of this style, they're like, you know, like voxel style games. I haven't played one in a long time, so it was nice to come across this one because this is voxel du jour.
Voxel.
Yeah, you know, little boxy people. I love voxels. I love boxy people. They make
and I laugh at you saying you haven't played one in a while because that means you fucking haven't played Rain on Your Parade.
They aren't. No, no, they're not voxels like this. At least I don't think they are. I have to go back because I did play the first two or three levels of Rain on Your Parade, and I like the idea.
The people are voxels.
Oh shoot!
Oh fuck! I just heard thunder, and I don't know if it was here or there.
I think it's there because you were talking about Rain on Your Parade. The cloud's like, "Yo, what's up, bro? What you doing?" And you're like, "Why are you being an asshole, cloud?" But we're not. But the game. Shoot, forgot the game. So.
So what are we talking about?
So Dungeons and Gravestones, the idea that you are a hero who just happens to plop down in this town, and this town is in danger, and the only way to save them is to delve into the depths of the dungeon in the back and do the do. So what ends up happening is when you enter the dungeon realm proper, you're like, you know, a lot of these like these kinds of games, like these dungeon crawler games, have like a hunger meter or something. Well, in the case of this game, it's a blood meter, and the blood meter drains constantly the entire time you're there. Like, right, like if I don't pause the game, I'm just standing still. Your blood drains because that's a trait of the dungeon. The overlord of the dungeon drains your blood. So you're moving around, and you can go. You hop from square to square, and you can attack enemies by, like, you know, striking them when you can. You could also use a block button to defend against them. You have a quick bar, a quick item bar at the bottom of the screen that consists of a blood potion for restoring blood, a health potion for restoring health, arrows for firing across long distances, bombs for blowing up enemies and walls, a box, which I never really did much with those, but you pretty much can use them to block passageways and also to, like, say, push them into water to, like, give you a bit of, like, a bridge or something to cross over. And then the town portal, which you can use to teleport out of the dungeon itself. So, and also weirdly enough, though I kind of suck at how manipulating it also is that while you are blocking the item, there's a button you can press to kind of scroll through your quick items and then a button to use one of those. But there's also two items that are already attributed to triggers. And when you switch to, when you use the block button, those two items switch to other items. So it's like a way to just kind of jump from like a box, like the healing potion or something. Now, as you run around fighting enemies, you get money. You can find pools of blood on the ground to restore blood while you're running through the dungeon floors. Treasure chests to get the goods. Treasure, of course. And keys, which you can use to unlock doors. Your overall goal is to proceed from floor to floor, going further and further down into the dungeon to eventually challenge the overlord douchebag. every 20 or so floors, you might also fight a boss. It's not might, you will fight a boss every 20 floors. In addition to that, every once in a blue moon, you might stumble across a rip in time space. And when you enter that, it takes you to like a sort of puzzle room that is pre-established. Cause while all the floors are, I guess, like kind of randomly generated, these portal rooms are constructed with the intent being for you to solve them. And if you do, you get a treasure chest item. You only get one shot though, which kind of blows because if you screw it up, you're going to be like, man, now I'll never know what was in that damn treasure box. There's a guy in town that lets you retry them, but if I remembered what he said correctly, he said you can try them, but you don't get the goods. So it's like, what the hell do I care about playing it for if I can't get the treasure? Unless that means that it's possible for that room to reappear on future runs in the right if you come across a portal that takes you there. But I digress. Of course, being this type of game, people die. They die a lot. You'll die. Yeah. And what happens when you die in this game is if you have enough money, you can pay the scratch to get revived on the spot. But if you don't have the money, you will go back to the surface as a dead body. No, you don't. You're actually alive again. But you did die, and you left your body. So you're revived in town. Now, this has two impacts on your gameplay. Well, three. One is the obvious one. You got to start from the start and go back down again. Two, if you can get back to your body, just like in like Dark Souls-type games or whatnot, you can get your money that you dropped back. And if you die again, that money stays gone forever. And lastly, every level you gain while you're traveling down below counts as level points. And when you die, they get banked. And eventually what that does for you is there's like a huge grid that you can go to. And this grid is a series of tiles. I'm talking a lot of freaking tiles. And you can spend the level points to unlock perma perks, like increase your max blue potion capacity, which is how you heal yourself. You can increase the discount you get from merchants that like wandering merchants in the dungeons. You can get more blood potions. You can unlock spells that you can input through key commands. There's a fair bit of stuff you can unlock through there. And the amount of life points that would level points it would take you to unlock it all means you'll be dying a freaking frick ton to get them all. There's a lot going on with that. The items that you can acquire now, the store in the game, it sells general goods. But the further into the dungeon you get, the more items that will unlock in the dungeon or in that shop proper. In addition to that, eventually a person will show up in town that will allow you to spend money plus collected goods, like the little gem shards or whatever, to upgrade your gear up to levels, like additional levels, like Rapier number 2, 3, 4, Falchion level 2, 3, 4, whatever. And that just increases the base stats of that weapon. Of course, generally the best option for upgrading is just to buy a better damn weapon. I wish I realized that. Because I feel like I always didn't want to buy it before I find it. Just because, like a Falchion, you got to go down past the point where where the rapier is doing enough work for me, for example. But if you want to play the game and be like, well, I can just bomb jerks and dodge golem stam or smashings or whatever, then you can do that too. But I was like, I got the rapier first, and I was lucky to find that. But then beyond that, I was like, I got to upgrade because I'm getting my ass beat, and I haven't found a Falchion yet. What's going on? But that is generally the game. Like, there are, like, weird side events, for example. Like, one thing I noticed was there's a tree in town, and if you smash trees in the dungeon and get tree serum, you can take them up to that tree, jam it in the tree, and then after your next run, you'll come back and food will grow from the top of the tree. Like, one time a nut fell from the tree, inside of it was a piece of fish. This is a weird tree. I don't ask questions. I just eat the damn fish. But you'll be doing stuff like that. A few interesting nuggets to the game, though, is that the game can be a little challenging, but thankfully it's not like complicated. I will say that. Like I said, enemies, you're just like hopping back and forth. You attack an enemy, you can guard against attack, but you can also sometimes just like hop out of the way because you can sometimes choreograph their attacks and know when they're going to do them. But also, whereas a lot of roguelike games, you'll find items in the dungeon and then be able to equip them on the fly. In this game, they stay in your tank until you leave. So if you're in the dungeon running around and you find a cool new shield or weapon, you can't equip it yet until you actually vacate the dungeon in the first place. So all the more reason to get out of the lot.
Head back to town and keep your shit and live to fight another day.
That's right. Oh, and one last thing I should have really mentioned. There is a bar in the town that allows you to take on various quests for money. Nothing too complicated. It'll usually revolve around kill X number of enemy or bring back X number of item. Or that again, but with something else. But again, it's not a bad thing. It's one more thing to keep track of while you're running around to get some loot for doing something you're already trying to do. So I always keep my quest log stacked, you know, max out as many as I can on a run, come back and turn it in. And then the game will like upgrade some of them with a better version. Like first you'll kill 20 slimes, get a reward. And then I'll say kill 40 slimes. You're like, well, I'm going to do that. get a reward for killing 40. So again, it's like nothing complicated, just fun.
And I just want to say, despite what Cole says, I love the visuals in this game. I love the whole HD 3D effect with the 8-bit style. I love that voxel look. Cole doesn't. I do. So suck it, Cole.
You're here to that. I've always loved voxels. Like, I mean, that was the whole gimmick for 3D Die Hero. Hey, yeah, we still
3D Die Heroes was awesome.
Yes, it was. Great freaking game. I actually booted that up for nostalgia's sake like a month or two ago. Just played around with it again. Like, it's a good game.
Next, you fuckers are going to say you like anime chins.
I don't even know what you mean, the double butt chin and like shows?
No, anime chins.
Anime chins, where they're all like pointy and shit.
But I've seen anime chins where they're like Popeye butts too.
I really like this voxel game called The Tourist with a Y.
Yeah.
I wanted to buy that actually, but I've been waiting. I keep looking for a price drop and it never gets it. Like,
no, Game Pass. Shin'en never like drops their prices practically, but their games are so good. I bought like most of them.
Maybe I should take a plunge on Tourist as well. So we'll see how that goes. Cause I'm curious about it, but again, never drops in price.
Yeah. Also good is the description for this game, because I didn't read the whole thing, but the story synopsis is: awakened from deep slumber, you found yourself in a city destined to be devoured by Demon King of Death. There was only one road leading outside of it, straight into the dungeon entrance. The gates were open, and then what might be the greatest line I've ever read: a terrifying place where blood is steadily suck.
Oh, it suck, all right. Oh, it suck.
Where blood is steadily suck. I don't know what they were going for with that sentence, but I do know what they were going for with the game, and I'm fucking addicted to it. I'm having a blast with this game. I bought it myself. I dropped the $25 on it. I think it's been absolutely worth it. I am loving my time with this game. But Purnell, you're the one reviewing it, so what do you think for $25?
Honestly, I feel as though, I mean, I guess it boils down to like how someone values their dollar, but I can say that the time I put in this game, it has been a good time. And I think it's a buy it personally, but if you feel as though 25 is too much, wait for a little bit of a discount. But ultimately, at some point in time, I think this is worth your money. It's a good time.
Awesome. All right. Next up, we have a two pack of Zetalon games. The first is 50 Years, developed by Alexander Golovkin, published by Zetalon, released coming out May 12th on Windows 10 for $4.99. 50 Years is a fast-paced alternative to the bigger, longer turn-based strategy games. You can win or lose a game in a single evening. Either way, you'll want to play it again. We covered this one a while back on Xbox. Now it is coming out on Windows 10. Chris, what do you think of it on Windows 10?
I didn't know that we had reviewed it already. Yes. So this is...
We do a lot on the other episodes that you're not on.
Yeah, I guess so.
We have like guests on and we talk. Crazy.
I don't know about this whole talking thing.
It's weird.
Overrated, if you ask me.
It is. I don't like it.
I'm not even gonna give it a try. It. No, just kidding. Okay. Yes. So 50 years. So this is basically like your Civilization style, strategy simulation of like building up your kingdom and building up buildings and like, you know, building up your military and taking over someone else, I suppose, except that it is like distilled down into its most basic essence, and it is actually really fast. It's like, you know, taking bridge or canasta and turning it into war if you play card games. Anyways, yeah,
the it's over like, 60 crowd love that joke.
The over 60. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's my audience. Fellow boomers. Anyways. Yeah. So, you basically choose your country of origin. It is very Civilization style, because, you know, you can have the Americans against the Romans, for instance. So actually, does it ever say what the other kingdoms are, or is it just these are just enemies? I don't think it does.
Do you remember?
I think you just choose your country.
I don't remember. Yeah, I just remember there's unicorns and tigers. I could tell you, but I didn't get to review it on Windows 10. So.
Oh, well. Boo-hoo. You'll have to drop the $5 for the achievements yourself.
I already did.
Anyways, yeah, so you start off. That's a good achievement. You start off your town, I think, with like basically nothing, like it's just a couple of peasants, right? And the more peasants you add, the more money you get per turn, and you know, you use that money to purchase more buildings and unlock more types, and you can purchase swordsmen, and then you can, like, you know, save up some more money and build a building for food, and, you know, because food equals your cap for how many total units you can have. And all of this to say, you know, you just keep progressing through and unlocking and, you know, adding in more peasants to get more money, and that's kind of a gamble because you might get attacked. So when you get randomly attacked, it sends all of your fighting units, whatever they are. You start off with swordsmen, and you can add in archers, paladins, and mystical creatures eventually. And again, what country you pick actually does determine certain things. Like, there's certain bonuses and even like total game changer, like type of things, like different buildings act differently and all that other stuff. So it's actually kind of, you know, unless you're the Americans, it's actually pretty interesting to like play around with different countries, because the American one is the default one, and just it just adds one peasant's worth of money to your to every turn. So good for if you need some money. But anyways, when you get attacked, it throws all of your units into a battlefield, and then it throws all their units into a battlefield, and you can look at them to see their stats and stuff, but you actually are kind of hands off on the combat. You just let it go. Like, you're, the units just fight each other. Whoever's the stronger one is the victor. If you are victorious, then you get to continue the game, of course. If your units, if any units get killed, then you have to replace those units. You can also supplement it by adding in one of your peasants as a militia, and then they're really weak, but at least they'll help, like, be arrow fodder. And, like, if your swordsmen are outmatched, you kind of need those little guys in there doing what they can. And, you know, every time you get attacked, the enemy gets more and more elaborate until you finally get overcome if you didn't build your units up fast enough. So, yeah, it's really just kind of... Again, it's like Civilization. It's building up your global power, but really, really fast, like within 50 turns, of course. And, you know, I did not make it to 50 turns. I kept getting killed right around the 20-year mark. But I did try, like, various different countries and different units and stuff. And, man, this game, like, it's funny because these kind of strategy games usually are, like, a whole, like, multi-day affair, like, where you're really building up stuff. A game of 50 years is usually over before 50 minutes.
Yeah.
So I really, really enjoy this approach to the genre. I didn't think I would as much as I did, but I just kept restarting. Like, I didn't even, you know, getting killed didn't bother me. I was just like, all right, well, I'll learn, you know, that was 20 minutes right there, and I'll, now I know better for my next 20 minutes. Maybe I'll make it 25 minutes this time.
And it's easy achievements. I'm looking at the achievement list now, and it looks just as easy as it was on Xbox. Yeah. So you'll be popping those like candy.
Yeah, so there's an overall level that you can gain from defeating enemies, of course, and all that stuff. And when you do gain a level, it's gaining faith. And you can, one of the kind of countries, I think it's the Romans, can exchange their faith for more units instead of money. So that's kind of cool. But yeah, if you gain enough faith, then you unlock like a new belief of, you know, five different things that you can unlock. And I think if you unlock the first level of each of those, which means hitting level 2 on different campaigns, like between that and stuff that you're going to do anyway in the game, that pretty much gets you all of the gamer points, I think.
Yeah. So, beating the game and yeah, picking one of every.
But
faith.
If you're a person who doesn't care about achievements, like
it's Moi, still fun. This game is still awesome. I love this one on Xbox.
It's so good. Yeah.
I'm probably going to double dip on this one too, because this one was really fun to play.
Well, yeah. On the Windows 10, I guess what you get out of it is a mouse interface, which is really actually handy. Mm. I quite liked playing this game with a mouse. I don't think I would like playing it with a controller.
It was easy enough on controller, but
yeah,
I could see how it would be definitely improved on PC, but $5 on it. What do you say?
Easily do like Joe did and buy it twice. Like, this is one of the easiest recommended, and it's such a cheap game too. So it's, you know, it's almost, I don't have really like a level for how much I recommend this game based on its price. It's like, yes, go do it. Obviously.
Cool.
Go.
All right, next up is Castle of No Escape 2, developed by Dex Team, published by Zetalon, releasing May 12th on Windows 10 for $4.99. Prepare yourself for the dangers of the cursed castle. Countless heroes have tried and failed to destroy the ancient spell that holds its walls. Meanwhile, hundreds of monsters are roaming inside, guarding the sword shards, the last known thing to be capable of defeating the demonic castle owner, thus shattering its magical structure. Chris, tell us about Castle of No Escape 2.
All right, well, I'm excited about this one because I reviewed Castle of No Escape, and I quite liked it. And I think the developer even gave us feedback and said that they appreciated that we didn't talk about the achievements so much. Although this game, holy geez, you can get the achievements in about 5 minutes in this game. No joke. Anyways, And that's Zilon. All I'll say about it. All you got to do is start the game with each of the different characters and do like one or two things and you're done. So that's it. That's all I'm saying about the achievements. I liked Castle of No Escape quite a lot. And in fact, I've beaten it about 3 times now. The reason is not so much because it's like the top tier quality game. You know, I've got 800 games on the Switch easily. So it's like, it's more that it's so short and it's so easy to like, you know, if you died from some random thing the first time, you know, it's kind of easy to kind of tell when you're about to beat the game. You're like, oh, okay, well, I got this stuff early enough. That means I can kind of sail to the end. So, you know, it became where I got to where I could beat it pretty quickly. So I'm kind of like, all right, I'm ready to play the sequel now. Well, the sequel is like, it's not even like, I wouldn't even describe it as fleshed out as much as like, if you were to consider this a fleshed out game, then the previous game was just a single like bone. And that's a little bit of humor for you. Humorous. Anyways.
Carnage, I'm sure, loved that one.
I hope they were listening. Anyways, yeah, this game now, instead of just hopping around from grid to grid. Oh, we got a Kappa for that one. Instead of hopping around from grid to grid and bashing into enemies, you now have full control, kind of Zelda style, although it kind of reminded me a little more of, let's call it Zelda, be simple, where you actually are like, you know, swinging a weapon or shooting a fireball, as it were. And the enemies, you know, really are like they're in the room pouncing around and they each have like different things that they do. And yeah, it's very much like it looks like a Zelda dungeon now with the four walls and like, you know, all the stuff in there. But of course, they're placed randomly now. And of course, the enemies as well. And the treasures. The treasures that you're supposed to look for are the 5 pieces of the sword, of course. And that becomes very complicated because there's also a fake broken, you know, like items. And if you pick up one of the fakes instead of one of the real ones, then it lowers your attack rate. And there's just all kinds of traps like that. And, you know, you may find yourself getting overwhelmed pretty quickly. But now it has like, you know, a potion system. It has a magic system where you can basically use one attack for free and then another attack that costs your green magic points that can be then refilled by various means. And, you know, like the last game, you get armor and you get, you know, you get armor. I don't think you get weapon upgrades because your characters have such different weapons. And the characters are, there's 3 that you can play as. And then there's 2 that can be unlocked, I assume, once you beat the game. I haven't unlocked any of them yet. And yeah, if you start a game with each of those 3 characters, then you're pretty much done with achievements. And yeah,
the achievements are pretty ridiculous on this one. Some of the difficult ones in this game are kill 5 enemies.
Yeah, which you can do in a single room. Yeah, and then use your secondary attack.
Yeah, use nimble attack. Use the sign in the first room. Find and use any potion.
Yeah.
We said we wouldn't talk about the achievements, but man, they are. This is one of those games where I wish the achievements were better because I wanted to play more of the game.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing, it is a roguelike, so you're different, you know, it's going to be different every time when you play it. Sometimes it's ridiculously difficult, sometimes you will make some progress. And like I said, there's a lot more stuff to learn in this game rather than just, you know, moving around the grids until something either kills you or makes you invincible. What I really, really love about this game, and I did want to take the time to actually shout it out, is that the game comes with a manual option. If you choose the manual from the game screen, it pulls up literally a paper manual that has been scanned badly that they invented just for this game. And it is so good. It even has a section about blowing into the cartridge and things like that.
That's beautiful.
In that manual, you will learn about every enemy and every power up and every little thing in the game. Like, there's actually no mystery. Unlike most of these cheaper indie games, you actually can learn about what everything does in this game with this handy manual that I love so much. So, nice. Yeah.
Well, $5 on Castle of No Escape 2. What do you say?
I say, yeah, this is a buy it. If you were maybe, you know, hesitant to get into the first game because it's a little too simplistic, this is definitely the game for you. Also, if like me, you got to where you can beat the first game in like 5 minutes, then this game is for you. Really, I mean, yeah, unless you're just looking for like a, you know, an actual like Zelda style, like full fledged adventure game type of thing. I mean, this probably won't be for you because it all takes place in a single dungeon. But I mean, for $5 and, you know, if you like achievements, of course, you can get them in a few minutes.
Oh, yeah. Jordan in chat saying I'm buying it for those Chivos.
Yeah, do that, but also play the game because it's fun.
It is.
Clearly a lot of care went into it from somebody who already made a pretty good, you know, much simpler game before. So,
yeah, two good Zetalon games, 50 Years in Castle and No Escape 2, both solid, both worth picking up for $5.
Heck yeah.
All right, final game to talk about tonight is called Control Override, developed by B-Deshi Interactive, published by BrainStation 23 Limited, released April 20th on Steam for $2.99. Control Override is a puzzle game where you must share control between the environment and yourself, defy physics, solve puzzles, terminate the rogue AI, and perhaps confront the truth about why it went rogue. Purnell, tell us about your time with Control Override.
Okay, well, Control Override is actually a fairly simple game, yet also, despite being simple, has a little complexity in regards to how it's executed. So the premise of this game is, like you described, you're trying to take down a rogue AI, and this is done by traversing the Digiscape. As a square, because this dude's totally uncool. Get it? Square. So this square begins every level with no abilities whatsoever. It's just a stationary square that can't do anything except take on the properties of commands. So every once, strewn about the levels, you'll find like arrows just pointing in different directions in squares. You can use your control ability to take on the property of the arrow. So if an arrow is pointing to the right and you use the control button and aim at it and collect it, now you gain the ability to walk to the right. Same with left, down for going through platforms, and then up for jumping. Now, that's how you generally just move around. However, the thing that makes this game puzzly is the fact that in addition to just getting the abilities to move around, you can also distribute those properties to platforms and objects on certain on the levels. So you might say, for example, want to move the property to a box that makes it start moving to the left so that you can then get on top of it. And then you can give it move property to move it to the right so it can take you across to the exit gate on the stage. Sometimes you might find a block where the exit platform is on the bottom of the block as opposed to the top. So you need to move the platform down so you can walk into the exit gate from the bottom. You'll come across stuff like that. And eventually, of course, the traps become a little bit more intricate in the form of like lasers that you got to dodge by, like, say, using the blocks to block their way from hitting you and stuff like that, and passing control between various things, like to this, then to that, then to this, then to that. But as like I said before, it's like one of these where it's like it's never really complicated to the point where like you just can't solve it. But it does make you think every once in a while. You're like, how do I resolve this little bit of a number? And the game itself isn't all that meaty either. It's like a quick fix of the concept, and then it's done before you get tired of said concept. Honestly, as far as I'm concerned, it does its job well. I like the neon colors, even though the music is exactly like you know, I'm not going to be banging it out in my car or anything. But inside the game, it's pretty decent there, too. It sets the mood for me while I'm playing it. So, honestly, I'm pretty okay with this title.
Well, $3, what do you say?
Just because I don't get to use it very often, I want to give it a fuck it, why not? Because again, it's like a simple puzzler that doesn't overstay its welcome and is dirt cheap.
Awesome, works for me.
I mean, fuck it, why not, right?
All right, well, that is it for this episode. Made it through.
We did it.
Well, you barely did anything, Cole. We had one for you, but we bumped it because I'm tired and I want to go to bed. So, does anyone have any final words to end this show?
Get sleep, I guess. Get your full 7 hours.
Feel better, Ashley. Love you.
Yeah, I love you, Ashley. Yep. Love you.
That is a very good. If she listens to this show, feel better.
She doesn't.
Jamais retourné. moyen pour arrêter les étrangers.